You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
This is the true story of a New York City boy with big town hopes and small neighborhood dreams of becoming BFFs with the Real Housewives and other Bravo celebrities. Then, one day, that dream actually came true. Let me take you behind the velvet rope. Hey everyone, this is David. Welcome back behind the velvet rope. Let's just get right into it today because we are joined by the one, the only Miss Judy Gold. Hello.
Oh God, Judy Gold. I love it, David. Wait, David, you yes. know what your last name is, right?
Yonta. Well, I do know because do you know that half my family has the last name Holiday? My uncle changed his last name to Holiday. So my cousins and all of that and the kids, it's Holiday.
That is crazy? So unbelievable to assimilate.
You know what it is? Well, he was the first one to move to New York City way back when. You know, just like, I mean, which in New York City in business, Yontef gets you far, you know, like it's a Jew right. city.
Right.
But he just felt like, listen, when I was young, my parents were like, you're not changing your last name to Holiday. That was all I wanted to do in life was, and what? When I make dinner reservations and stuff, I just sometimes say Holiday just because.
Oh, wait, what year did your grandfather come over?
You think I know that?
Okay. No, like, you think that having a Jewy name will help you, but my grandfather was an architect and an engineer. He built like the underpinnings for the A train and like he built all these buildings in the 40s, 30s, you know, around there.
Wow.
And his last name was Goldberger. And he was offered a job on the, you know, housing authority or some city agency if he changed his last name.
Really?
And he said no.
I love it.
Yeah. So, you know, fuck the Holiday side of your family, Jew haters.
That's like what I say. I say like, you know, so, but I'm over okay. wanting to change my last name. But when I was right. growing up, you know, and wanting to be cool, that was the cool thing.
I know, but I love that name, Yontef, because it's like, it's just happy. It's like, good Yontef.
Well, that's yeah. what it is. It's Holiday. Yeah. But not yeah. everyone would know that. But you're such, yes. you are such a good Jewish girl that you know it.
I'm a Jew. Yeah.
Where are you from originally? Are you from this area, New York area?
I am from New Jersey originally. And then I moved to New York right when I graduated college. And I've lived in New York ever since. But right now, I am at my house in Provincetown, Massachusetts.
Nice.
I've been here since March. I mean, I went back in June for a couple of times. One to record my audiobook and one to be in New York. Because I literally, when I left in March, I thought I was coming here for 2 weeks.
Tell me about it. Remember that? You know?
Yes. I was like, oh, all right, I'll be back in a couple of weeks. just take a little break. And we were like, you can't go back till after Memorial Day. I cannot fucking believe this. David, can you fucking believe this shit?
No. Okay. No. Well, first of all, I was going to say, it doesn't look like you're in New York. I'm like, if that's your New York apartment, that looks very different than
a
New York apartment.
You're not in New York, are you?
I'm in Chelsea.
That gray thing is fucking, what is that, a closet
look at
door?
This. Look at that pink artwork over there.
Oh my God, you are so gay. I love it.
My apartment is
in Chelsea, that's number one.
Let's just start with that. My apartment is literally 50 shades of gray. Dark gray, medium gray, lighter gray. And that pink artwork there is the only pop of color.
Can I tell you something?
Yes.
I love gray. What the fuck is that? I love gray.
Love.
Like, people are like, oh, we're going to do a white wall. I'm like, no, I love gray. Like, I think gray is a great color.
It's gray and pink are my colors.
Yeah, I love it.
Where do you live in New York?
Upper West Side, because I'm a Jew with kids. Yeah.
That's where.
Little Israel.
That's where it's Little Israel. Do you love living on the Upper West Side?
I do. I mean, I've never, first of all, my mother grew up on the Upper West Side. And I feel like a link to history, like I pass by her building all the time and my aunt and my grandmother, you know, all the buildings. But I mean, it's changed a lot, but it is, it's home. I've been there since 1984. But I'm telling you, the fucking banks every goddamn block, I can't with that. And all the mom and pop stores going, like, that's like, I had a pharmacist who I literally would call up, Peter's Pharmacy. And they'd go, Peter's Pharmacy. And I go, hi. And they go, Judy. I mean, come on. Where else is that going to happen? So now I have to call Duane Reade. I fucking hate them. But it's changed a lot. And I'm not a big fan of de Blasio.
No, I'm not. Especially, you asked me if I can believe what's going on in the world. I mean, it's just,
How is New York right now?
Do you miss New York by not being
here? I do. I think about it all the time. But it's not the New York I left. Like,
it's weird.
You know, I'm glad I came here and everyone can be like, hey, you left New York. But I get to be outside. Like, I really get to be out. When I left in March, you really couldn't go outside. So at that time, I was hiking and, you know, we were biking and we were outside. And we could do shit in the driveway, you know, work out, whatever. But now, and I was back in June, and I like the outdoor eating, right? That is nice.
Yeah.
But there's no comedy clubs open. There's no theater open. It's like you live in New York so that when you walk outside, you're in New York City. And so much of New York City is not there.
Yeah. I mean, like, to your point, in the beginning, I did not leave my apartment. You know, I left to go to the grocery store, but I would, like, stock up as if I lived in a snowstorm in like Maine,
right,
like as if right, the grocery right. store, I'd be like, no, I want all of that. Like all that prepared food. They'd be like,
yes.
How much? I'm like, you see those
everything.
17, right. Like, yeah. I don't understand. Like, I'm not coming back here because
right.
I can't leave my house. Now it's different, but you're right. Like it's good now, but it's like, it is depressing. Like when you are sitting outside and you're having a good time, but you're like, there's still no life. It's a little depressing.
Right. And I was there during the riots too. So I'm riding my bike and everything is not riots. I don't even know why I said fucking riots during the protests. Riots.
We're going to talk about choice of words and all that when we get into your book at the end.
But yeah, I was there during the protests and everything was boarded up. Everything was boarded up and it was so, I was like, where the fuck am I? I mean, like a European country in the 40s. Like, what the fuck is going on?
How is it there? Like, do people know? Because so I have friends in like Greenwich, Connecticut. So like I've been, you know, gone to, right. Well, that's what I was going to say. You go to Greenwich, Connecticut and like you know, you go there for a day or two, you're happy. It's like there's nothing going on in the world.
I don't understand. Here,
they're living in like their own world there, which is nice for a day. You're like,
Because they can live in there. They can afford to live in their own little world. But here in Provincetown, you know, I really believe that, first of all, it's an incredible community. And we went through the AIDS. I was here, you know, during the AIDS crisis too. And because of that, everyone wears a mask. There's mask ambassadors who walk down the street and hand out masks. A lot of there's a lot of takeout, which is good. Some of them, you like order it and they put it in, on a table outside. Some stores have gloves. You cannot walk into a place without a mask. And of course, you know, look, a lot of the beaches are closed on the Cape. So there's so many stray people coming here and Trumpies. And it's like, get the fuck out of here. Like, we didn't make this town for you. And no reverence. Like, that's the thing. They're walking down the street and they're like, oh, look at that shop and look at that, you know. And I'm just like, do you understand where this town came from and why it exists? Get the fuck, go to Wellfleet. There's so many other places on the Cape for you to go to. But if you say something, I've said, you know, you need to wear a mask or something. Some of them say, fuck you. I got called a dyke at the Cumberland Farms. Like, there, it's a weird summer. But the people who are homeowners and you know, year rounds, everyone's really bonded together in a community. But it's like, I don't even want, I'm doing two shows a week though. I'm working Monday nights and Wednesday nights.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I get to work outside at the Crown and Anchor Monday night. And Wednesday night, I do a show with Varla Jean Merman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that's, are you ever going to come back to New York?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know when. I mean, I am in New York, so I can go to the theater. I can go to do stand-up at the comedy clubs. And my kids are, one's in college and one's 24. So I was planning on staying here in September anyway, because it was going to be my first September ever of my life that I could have stayed here. And, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you know you were funny growing up? Like, when did you first realize you were funny?
Well, I always said, this was my childhood. Judith, we don't talk like that. And I'm like, why? And like, that is basically the way I was. I always talked about why aren't we talking about, you know, the elephant in the room? Always. Why are there so many secrets? Like, I was just this precocious big mouth. But you know, I was bullied a lot. And I think, you can't learn funny, but I do think the fact that, you know, I was teased and bullied and called names every day. And in my head, I was like, you motherfucker, like, who the fuck do you think, you know? But I didn't say anything, because my mother was like, Judith, ignore them, they're jealous of you. And I'm like, they're not fucking jealous of me. But later on, like years later, like 35 years later, my therapist is like, no, you should have fought back, which I was doing in my head. So I feel like, you know, being laughed at and being bullied and knowing you're funny, it's like, I wanted to control the laughter. I wanted to control what they were laughing at. And I also, I'm fearless. Like, it's because there's nothing you can say to me that I haven't heard before. You know, I've been humiliated. I've been, you know, belittled. I've been through it all. So, you know, it's funny that your show is the Velvet Rope. And it's like, some of the things that sort of trigger those memories, because I hate the word trigger, but unless it's used properly, are times when you're behind a velvet rope and you're doing the step and repeat. And it's like, oh God, you know, so-and-so is in front of me and they're so famous. And I'm just like a comic. I'm just like, and you know, please know who I am, you know. And sometimes it's like, I'm sorry, your name and what do you do? And I'm like, fuck you fucking asshole, fuck. So, you know, it's that, this idea, like, you have to put on a happy face.
Yeah.
You know.
I was bullied, too, so I like, get it.
Right. Don't you feel like, weren't, you know, you feel like, fuck you, you fucking piece of shit. You're ugly.
Yeah.
You're short. You're dumb. You're fat. You're this. You know, oh, okay, fat. I said fat. Sorry. But whatever, you know, and you're picking on me because I'm gigantic. You know, like, fuck you. But, you know, we're marginalized. You know, we're also marginalized because we're LGBT.
Right.
Q plus pi sine cosine. Umlaut. And it's like, you know, when you're marginalized, you have a great sense of humor. Because there, as my mother used to say, if we weren't laughing, we'd be crying. I mean, it's a coping mechanism. And gays are the best fucking audience. Jews are the best audience. People of color are the best audience because they can laugh at themselves.
Does anyone else think buying gifts for the men in your life is difficult and kind of puts it off to the last minute? Well, now there's an easy solution because grooming gift sets from Duke Cannon are available at Target. They're fun, they're useful, and they freaking smell so good. Take Frothy the Bear Man gift set. It's 3 big-ass bricks of soap that are infused with beer and booze. But they don't smell like beer and booze. They smell like citrus, oak barrel, and sandalwood. It's a great gift for any guy who cleans himself. So it really applies to everyone, whether they bathe frequently or not. Or there's the Beard That Stole Christmas gift set. It's a box set of beard goods, basically beard oils, beard washes. And the best thing is both of these packages that I just described are $20. That's right, $20. The Frothy the Beer Man gift set, you get 3 huge bars of soap. With the Beard That Stole Christmas gift set, you get 2 beard oils and 1 beard wash. And the thing is, these make great gifts, guys, because the packaging, it's so kitschy, it's fun. The packaging itself is worth the $20. The products are functional. Who isn't going to use beard oil or a beard wash? And who doesn't want a huge block of soap? And they're really great soaps. They smell really good. They're fun gifts, $20. They're kitschy, they're great. The men in your life will love them. If you've waited to the last minute, I mean, how many days do we have left till Christmas Eve and Christmas? Let me tell you, there is a solution. The next time you're in Target, look for Duke Cannon grooming products in the grooming section and pick this up. The Frothy the Bear Man gift set, $20. The Beard That Stole Christmas gift set, $20. Available at Target. And you know what? When you give this as a gift and the men in your life are thanking you, you can come back and thank me.
Never thought about it like that, but that makes sense.
Right. We have humility. We know how to, you know, it's like comedy is so disarming and it's a unifier. And so, you know, you could be sitting in an audience at a club pre-pandemic and you're like sitting at a table and you're part of a bigger audience. Like you're part of the audience and you're laughing with the next table. You could hate them. You don't even know you hate them. You could hate them. But everyone's in it together, sort of. And the comedian, it's such a powerful position. It's like being an orchestra leader, you know, and you're eliciting a response. Involuntary. I mean, laughter is not voluntary unless you're faking it, you know. And it's a powerful position to be in. And in this country, we equate power with, you know, white men. So, you know, that's why I think it's harder for other types of people to, you know, gain the respect of an audience because of, you know, this fucking misogyny, bullshit, crap, racism, homophobia, fucking assholes. But
of what's, and you find like for truth, like if you go to like the middle of nowhere and it's like a straight white audience, it's not as appreciative.
You know, it's funny because some of the places I've gone to where I have thought, oh God, this is gonna suck. They're great. Little towns in remote places in the middle of nowhere. islands or artist colonies. Those audiences are so fucking great. Like I did an island off of Washington. I forgot Vashon Island. I don't even know what, but there's these little pockets of, you know, artists, colony, you know, people who, you know, went to a community and like made this community in the middle of like Redland, like liberal artsy. And those are the greatest. You know, look, I'm at the point where people will come see me. They know what to expect.
Yeah.
But that being said, I was doing a show my first night here in Provincetown, and people are dying to go to shows and dying to laugh because, you know, it's been a fucking shit show. So my first night, it was a Monday night. I think it was the beginning of July. And I did my show, and then I was at the Stop and Shop a few days later, and I am leaving, and my poster's up, right? Have you ever been to Provincetown?
Yeah, it's great. The more you talk about it, the more I'm like, you're making me want to like just get up there
Get up and like, come, go. Come in September. It's so great.
It is.
So my poster's up at the Stop and Shit, and I leave the Stop and Shit, and I see my poster because I always check to see they're still up because people take them down. And I look at it, and they wrote on my poster, someone took a Sharpie and wrote, horrible show. Which has never happened, ever. We're in Provincetown, free to be you and me. So I call the, you know, producer of the show. I'm like, can you fucking believe this? Like, what the fuck is going on? And he told me that there were 4 Trump supporters at my show the first night, and they complained and wanted their money back. And the owner, rightly so, Rick Murray, said, no, you're not getting your money back. And they went and defaced my posters. Now, if they went into the Stop and Shop to buy a Sharpie to do that, there's really something fucking wrong. But, you know, like,
seriously,
but no one does that. Like, you, like, why are comedians, first of all, it's never been like, he has fucking divided us so much, but it's never been like, okay, you think differently politically, you're on a different, you know, mindset politically than me, so I'm not going to enjoy your music, or I'm not going to enjoy your comedy or your art or your singing or your whatever. But now we're so fucking divided, and the fact that this motherfucker has no sense of humor, he can't even have a comedian at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, he wants SNL investigated, he can't, he's a fucking evil piece of shit prick, and all his followers, because that's what they are, it's a fucking cult, you can't even do a joke about his hair and they turn on you. It's never been like that. You comedians always talked about the president of the United States. That is fair game, you know? It's, he has fucking poisoned us. I hate that. Ugh! Did you watch the convention? Ugh!
I feel like I'm the only one that didn't.
Well, I feel like I have people, like I was at tennis today and they were like, oh, you didn't do that to yourself. I'm like, I have to, I'm a comic. But Ivanka Cunt was so bad. She's like, and I looked at my father and he looked at me and he said, you know, I really wish we could do that for more people. It's like, it was so fake and horrible and like, And, you know, some people don't like his tweets, but I like it. It's just like, I fucking hate you. I hate you. I hate all of you. I fucking hate you.
I haven't watched, like, actual non-recorded TV, like the news or anything, in, like, the longest time.
You are, David Yontif is smart. That's what I have to
say. I feel like I get enough of what's, like, you're the third person that's telling me it. So I'm like, all right, I don't need to watch it. I've already heard about it enough.
Do you get news on Twitter?
No.
Oh.
I literally get my news just from people being like, this is what happened. This is, like, I don't even know what phase we're in New York. I just listen to what someone wants to tell me, and I'm like, that's enough. I just... nothing's opening, like, today, so what's the difference?
So you're pretty emotionally healthy. You don't feel agitated or anything?
No.
Wow.
No, like in the beginning of all this, I also was like, what the fuck is going on?
Right.
Everyone bet their money against me because I am one of those people, like, for even for this, like, for work, I'm out every night. So I really was the typical New Yorker that was out like 7 nights right. a week, whether it's theater or whatever, drinks. Right. So in the beginning, I was like, I'm just at what? Like, I, like, right, my life right, has drastically right, right. changed. Not that, but then you just get used to it and you're like, all right, I'm just going to live in my bubble and get right, enough. And get enough. Yeah. And yeah, get enough adjust. Of the information.
Wow. You're, yeah.
But I mean, okay. you know, thank you for calling me emotionally healthy or whatever you just called me. Well, I'm not sure that anyone else has.
I know I shouldn't look at my phone, but it's like, and it's what he wants too. Like he wants to have free rent in your head. He wants everyone talking about him. And he's so abhorrent and fucking disgusting and despicable that you can't believe it. And like, so sometimes I'm like, I'm not even going to watch, but then I'm like, but I'm an American and I have kids and I'm, you know, an activist. And I, so I, but he's, I hate you. Okay.
Like, where else do you draw your, like, do you draw, I mean, cause like, I know like, you know, you're a Jewish, a lovely Jewish woman. Like, do you draw your other, so like you said, you have to watch technically cause you're a comic. Like, where do you draw your other material from? Like, your Jewish mom? Like, I know.
Oh, well, my mother's dead. So I don't get any jokes from her yet anymore. But that was free material for many years.
Right, like you had your stand-up.
Right.
25 questions for a Jewish mother.
That was, yeah, that was a one-person show. And, you know, I did 2 off-Broadway one-person shows, which were really...
Before we continue this conversation, I just want to say that 2020 has certainly been a year. And at the beginning of quarantine, there was a lot getting in the way of my happiness and achieving my goals. And I turned to BetterHelp, which is online professional counseling. And it really helped me not only achieve happiness during this time, but really achieve my goals. Behind the Velvet Rope went from 2 times a week to 4 times a week. And I wrote a book, the Behind the Velvet Rope book. So for anyone that feels that things are getting in the way of their happiness and achieving their goals, I strongly recommend BetterHelp. You don't even have to leave your house. It is online professional counseling. And what I love about it is you can start communicating with them within 24 hours of signing up. Anyone that knows me knows that if you don't get back to me, that is a huge pet peeve of mine. These counselors get back to you in a very timely manner, and you're really matched with a counselor that fits your needs. If you get a counselor that you don't like, you can just request another counselor. Everything, of course, is confidential. They deal with a variety of issues: depression, stress, anxiety, sleep. We're all having trouble sleeping during this. Trauma, anger, family conflicts, self-esteem, grief, LGBTQIA issues. And I have to say, it is actually more affordable than traditional online counseling, and financial aid is available for anyone that cannot afford it. So they're growing so rapidly, and so many people are turning to BetterHelp for help that they're looking for additional counselors in all 50 states. Go to betterhelp.com. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/velvetrope. BetterHelp.com/velvetrope, and you get 10% off your first month. Join over 1 million people today taking charge of their mental health. You're not alone. If you need help, this is a great solution. BetterHelp.com/velvetrope and get 10% off your first month.
Really great. But, you know, for as far as my stand-up, I mean, I am a stand-up. Like, that's all I think about all day. And, you know, sometimes I still pinch myself. Like, I'm 57 years old, and before pandemic, like, I still leave the house at 8:30, 9 o'clock to go downtown to the Cellar to do sets. And I'm like, oh, my God. I am sitting on the subway with my notebook, just like I was when I was, you know, 19, 20 years old. It's just, I'm still doing it. So it's the... I love that I can still do my art, but I am always in a perpetual state of being aggravated. And I thought I like, I'm, I notice everything. And like, there are a lot of things that just fucking annoy me. And so a lot of my stuff is just like the ridiculousness in everything and not taking yourself so seriously. And also, I now preface every joke with, okay, you know, if you're easily offended, you're going to hate this. And then, like, if I do a joke about the Holocaust or something, and then now it's, and you look, you can talk about any topic in stand-up as long as it's funny. You have to make the joke funny. So now when I get oohs and from the audience, which we never used to get, but now we get them all the time, I'm like, okay, so my Twitter is JWDY. You can like tweet at me and tell me what a fucking asshole I am and how I'm a self-hating Jew. So that's, you know, like I just throw it out there and put it back on them because you know what? We all need a fucking laugh.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
And my making jokes about myself or my, you know, my religion, my being a lesbian, you know, my relationship, you know, like if it doesn't bother Elisa, my girlfriend, if it doesn't bother my kids, if it didn't bother my mother, why the fuck does it bother you? You know?
Do you get a lot of like hate, like DMs on Instagram?
Oh, it's, yes, I get so, you know, I got so many people, you know, we were going to go see you in Florida, but not after what you wrote about our president of the United. I'm like, okay, fine. I don't fucking want you. Anyway, like it's just how dare you disrespect the president? Have you seen him? He like is there the word respect and him ever, even in the same fucking room, asshole? So I do get a lot of I do get hate mail, and I get most of it is anti-Semitic. There really? Is so much anti-Semitism; it is unbelievable.
You get that more than like hate against. You get that more than like.
LGBTQ.
Yeah.
Do you?
When I get hate, it's not usually because I'm gay, no.
Yeah.
It's because of other things.
Right.
Like the
right,
other
right.
day, someone wrote to me and DM'd me and, like, you know, I hate all these episodes of your podcast and this. And I'm like, thank you very much for quoting okay. specific things out of like 17 different podcast episodes.
Right.
And I'm glad that you hate it so much and you can keep
that
hating
you
it.
Keep, right.
Just keep listening, please.
It's
sure.
It's like everyone has a soapbox, you know, and everyone doesn't deserve a soapbox. And this is what's killing comedy. This is, you know, my book, it you know, people are reading it and saying, oh my God, I love this book. It's because it has a lot of history. It's the history of, you know, it's about free speech from the perspective of a comedian, but there's a lot of history of comedy and censorship and the greatest part of it is an argument, it's a polemic, but the greatest argument, the greatest part of the argument is that I get to mine the years and years of great comics material to prove my point. So it's funny and informative. It's just, yeah. And I had this, one of my first reviews on Amazon is this fucking see, cunt, who gives me one star, okay, and is like, I don't know why, she had to, talk about Trump and Trump supporters. I guess she, has to go. It's ridiculous, but it's about me being a lefty. Meanwhile, I completely attack the left and their political correctness as much. Right. So she writes this, I was disappointed that she had to, talk about Trump and Trump supporters. And then she says, I did enjoy the history of comedy and censorship. And that was very, and I like the way she handled the Bill Cosby thing, but overall disappointed one star. So which proves my point about the book is that you liked the book, but you're a Trump supporter. So instead of, saying I'm letting my emotion drive this and bring my fucking reviews my number of stars down.
Totally.
Because I don't like Donald Trump. Meanwhile, you did like it. I mean, it's just, and it just proves my point of this cancel culture. You said one thing I don't like, so fuck you. No.
And you want to say to someone, you sit at home, write a fucking book, and when your right. book is written and published, call me.
Right.
And let me know how that process was right. for you.
And also, you're so powerful now. You gave me one star and brought my total amount of stars down while you fucking go sell real estate in Florida. And I'm like doing research and trying to inform people and entertain people. Fuck you.
Is that so? Your book is called Yes, I Can Say That. So is that how it came about? Like, is it a product of cancel culture?
Well, this is how it came out. So Vice News on HBO did this piece about college bookers telling comedians what they can and cannot say on stage. Like, so they're interviewing, and they're like in their early 20s, and they're interviewing these kids, and they're like, yeah, we need to protect the students and, so they don't feel uncomfortable and blah, 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 safe space and blah, blah, blah. And so they said, would you do the opposing viewpoint? I'm like, absolutely. And I was in it and they did this piece and Ricky Gervais retweeted it. And an editor from HarperCollins wrote to me and said, would you be willing to write a book about free speech, cancel culture, all this stuff from the perspective of a comedian? I was like, yes. So it was really an assignment. And that's how the book came about. And it took a year. They wanted it out like right away, but there was no fucking way. And, it's made me love stand up even more. I mean, it makes me want to defend comedy even more. And, it's just interesting that when you, all these fucking assholes who take intent, context, and nuance out of a bit, you know what I mean? So someone says something and you hear a word, you're like, nope, can't listen to the rest. Nope. Blah, blah, blah. You're like, you can't even hear the whole fucking thing because you're triggered. That's the end of comedy. And comedy and satire, we tell the truth. That's why people are so threatened by comedians, because we speak truth to power. And people don't like that. And who are fucking asshole liars. So in that way, it is a weapon. But, if you murder someone and you're on trial for homicide, your sentence is determined by your intent. What were you thinking? Did you think about it before? Did you plan it out? But yet, a comedian doesn't get the same consideration. Like, it's so fucking annoying.
It's true.
And it's, look, you're gay. I have an example in the book.
I am gay. Thank you. Thank you for acknowledging.
Oh, yes. You're a gay. And this is just a generational thing. So in the book, I tell this story because, I play tennis here in Provincetown. I'm a professional tennis player. I'm so not, but I tell Elisa that I'm a professional tennis player all the time, and she's really good, and she gets so mad. Yeah, she's really good, and I'm like, well, I'm a professional tennis
player. Well, you're probably better than I am, so let's leave it at that.
Oh, please, look at you. Yeah, we play doubles, but anyway, we're like old Jewish ladies. So, so a couple of years ago, you know, they have carnival here in Provincetown, which is like Mardi Gras, and they have a big parade and everything. So the theme, I think it was 2 years ago, was the 80s, right? Ooh. So I was playing tennis with some guys, gay, my age, and they're like, oh, what are you going, you know, they're like, oh, we're dressing up as, you know, I don't know, it's like a disco, whatever, for the parade or something, or Madonna or something 80s, they were dressing up as. And they go, what are you going as? And I said, oh, I was thinking of going as a distressed T-cell, right? So we start cracking up. He then, the next week, he comes back. He's like, oh my God. I told one of my friends who's like in his 20s that you said that. And he was appalled. He was appalled. He couldn't believe it. And it was just because, you know, don't tell me I can't say that. I lived through the AIDS crisis. I watched people dying. You know, I worked at the first AIDS ride. I mean, the AIDS walk. I went and visited campsites when people were doing the AIDS ride to do stand-up for them. Like, I worked at God's Love We Deliver. Like, and I'm not saying that so you're like, oh, I'm just saying that it's like, that is my way of coping. And people from our generation, especially gay people, we have such an incredible sense of humor and camp, you know? And you think about it, straight, boring people are always like, oh, can we go to the gay bar with you? But do you ever hear gay people saying, oh, can we go to the straight bar with you and play pool and darts? No. Okay, because we're fun. But
that is true.
Yeah, but that whole generational thing, my friends that teaches stand-up, and she has a Holocaust survivor, you know, it's 2G, second generation. So the child of Holocaust survivor in the class. And then she also had like a 16-year-old in the class. And the child of Holocaust survivors is writing material about what it's like to grow up being the child of Holocaust survivors. And she was writing a joke about how they played hide and seek, but they called it Holocaust. And, you know, and this kid, this like 16-year-old kid wrote to my friend, the teacher, you know, I cannot stay in this class if you're going to allow her to write material about the worst, you know, the Holocaust. Who the fuck are you? This is her life. You know, it like, this is what's happening. You're uncomfortable with that. So no one should talk about like, this like idea of safe spaces. What is the fucking, every safe space has a door to the real world. It's not a fun world. Sorry. It's like this, everyone gets a trophy bullshit. Like you get a trophy because you won the race and you broke the record and you get a trophy for smiling while he did it. No, that's not real life.
Yeah.
So like this whole, yes, words evolve and you know, things have different meanings and some jokes I did 20 years ago, I would never do now, you know, but don't tell us what we can and cannot say. It's not.
I agree. It's impossible to offend, you know, I am offended 0.00001% of my life. Like it's right. So hard to offend me.
Right,
maybe it goes back to being bullied as a child. Like right, I've heard it all. Like,
oh, right.
Life is good now, people. Yes. Like it's so. I don't get it.
I feel like being offended is a choice. You know, because right. Yes, you can get a ping or like, oh, okay, and then move on with your fucking life. That's it. You know, and you know, people. I write in the book, the people who go to a comedy club and get upset for being offended because they got offended. It's like going to an amusement park, getting on a roller coaster and being upset that you got scared or sick, you know? Too fucking bad.
Well, like, also, I mean, I was going to say, like, I would love to know who these people are with that. I don't have that time. Like, do you have time to go home and be offended for 17 hours?
Oh, I know. Exactly.
Like, where, I'd like your life where I wake up and I have 24 hours to be offended by one
thing.
I'm
going to sit on the internet and write Yelp reviews. I mean, okay, miserable.
Seriously.
Go fucking finger your cat.
Seriously. Well, speaking for a second of the 80s, since we're going to segue into that for a second, you know where I'm going. I'm going to talk about my queen for 30 seconds. Let's talk about the Rosie Show.
Oh, okay.
You know where this is going.
I do.
Well, when your son, Henry, was held in the hands of a god amongst us, Miss Madonna.
So I was writer-producer of the Rosie Show. And Henry and Lourdes, Madonna's daughter, had the same due date, actually. But Henry was born a little before, I think. And, you know, this was when the whole Madonna Rosie thing would, like, be all over the tabloids and, you know, their BFFs and everything. So after Lourdes was born, there was, you know, Madonna was doing the show, but there was this rumor going around that she was going to bring Lourdes. So the executive producer's like, look, what if we had Madonna walk out with a baby and everyone thinks it's Lourdes, but it's not. Could Henry do it? And so I talked to my ex and we were like, sure. So that morning, I was already at work. Sharon, my ex, comes with... I mean, he was so cute and tiny, little baby. And she gets to Rockefeller Plaza, 30 Rock. And, you know, this is pre 9/11. So it's like, she gets out of the car and it's like paparazzi all over her. She gets in, they're like walking her into the elevator. They're trying to get in the, like, they think that she's the nanny and that's Madonna's baby. And they, like, she was like, I was scared. So we go upstairs, we're in a green room with Madonna and Henry and Sharon, my ex, and she's like, okay, so what do I need to know? And he was in this cute little blanket. I said, oh, he loves when you sing to him, which he does. She's like, oh, okay. So she starts singing and he starts bawling. So I'm like, okay, he loves when I sing to him. Anyway, so... Madonna walks out with the baby and everyone's fucking going crazy and I'm waiting in the wings and they're like, oh, the baby's, you know, Rosie's like, oh, the baby's so cute, and Madonna's like, oh, thank you, and Rosie's like, oh, and she kept referring to the baby as she, even though it was he, but no, you know, oh, she really is a, and but Madonna, that's not your baby. I know, but it, you know, Madonna's like, oh, but isn't it cute? And then, you know, I go and pick up the baby. But the best part of that story is she's like, oh, it's Judy Gold's. And I go and I grab Henry and I go backstage. My mother's friends were like, Judith had a baby? How do I not know Judith had a baby? I was watching the show and they said, Judith, why didn't you tell me Judith had a baby? And then my mother was like, Judith's roommate had a baby and then Judith adopted it. And that became my name of my first album, Judith's Roommate Had a Baby, because that's what she would tell people. My roommate had a baby and I adopted it, because that's what you do. Like, if your roommate's pregnant, I should probably pay for half of that kid. You know, like, so fucking ridiculous. But that was like a major coming out thing for me.
Wow.
For my mother's friends, who she never told.
Your mother like, why didn't you give me a heads up with this? Like, was she one of those mothers of like, oh my God, people know this?
No, she just did it again, didn't say anything. No one talked about anything in my family. I mean, if you were funny in my family, if you had a clever comment or a jab, you know, that got a lot of positive reinforcement, but no hugging, no, none of that kind of stuff. And just not talking a lot. Like, we didn't talk about, you know, if you don't talk about it, then it's not there. But that's, we all know silence equals death. So that was Judith. I got a call from so-and-so about, they saw you, and then now I have to explain. And I'm like, oh my God, Ma, are you fucking kidding? I mean, when I came out, she never was like, I'm never going to talk to you. I mean, but she was born in 1922. So it was like, you know, for her, it was like, oh my God. You know, she used to tell me, why can't you be more like Ellen? She doesn't talk about it all the time. I'm like, all right, let me cut my hair, wear men's clothes, and come over and visit you and dance. Like, all right, Joan, at the end, I know what I'm talking about. But yeah, that was, and I have to say, I am still friends with so many people from the Rosie Show. I've seen so many of them become really great executive producers, writers. And it was such a fun time. Like, it was really fun. And, you know, I remember when, you know, John McDaniel was the, you know, he was the band leader, and Rosie and me, you know, there were all these people. And I remember when we would do like rehearsals in the morning before the show, John and I, like, we would say, if middle America only knew how gay this is, like, the gayish, everyone here is gay, and we're just putting on a big gay show, you know, but it just couldn't be done at that time, you know?
Did you know? Well, yes. Yes to all of that. Did you know?
I was already out.
Did you know Madonna before that? Like, were you in that group? No. You weren't?
No, I'm a nerdy comedian. I've lived my entire life in comedy clubs. I was in LA for a few years before I went back and did Rosie, because when Henry was born, my ex had Henry. I had Ben 5 years later. But when my ex got pregnant, she was like, all right, we got to live either, you got to pick, because we can't live in two places. And I had just been on, you know, Margaret Cho's sitcom, All American Girl. And then I did another series, and I was really starting to get like, and then she was pregnant. And I was like, oh, I want to bring my kid up in New York. Like, my that was always my dream. It's like, name a better place to bring up your kid. Where did you grow up?
I grew up between Connecticut and New York. Like, right. I was born in Connecticut. Like, my whole family's New York, Connecticut, Long Island.
Right. So you get it. Like, I wanted to be, the only reason I was living in LA was for work. And it was like, what's that? I don't know. So, and look, being bullied, you know, if I grew up in New York City, it would have been a totally different experience. And, you know, I would always say to my kids on the way to school, do not ever bully anyone. And if you see someone being bullied, you go and help them and defend them. And my kids were like, Mommy, no one gets bullied. Like, you're fucking living in New Jersey in the 1970s. Like, we don't, like, they have trans kids and, you know, non-binary kids and questioning and gender fluid, and they don't give a fuck. They do not give a fuck. So, yeah, it was, I don't know. It makes you, gives you a thick skin, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Like, really personally think it's like one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Right. Like, you would not be who you are.
Totally.
And like, you wouldn't have that wicked sense of humor where, like, things just, you know.
Yeah. And it's like made me, like, you know, it's made me successful in life. It's as weird as that is.
Right.
Because you're just like, I'm going to prove you wrong. I mean, you know, it's many years later, I'm over it now, but it's like,
So the LA thing was like, I didn't want him to be brought, and LA is so like high school, you know, everyone is in the same business. So it's like, you all go to the same high school. You're either really popular, or you used to be popular, or you're a druggie, or you're just, you know, whatever. And So when I moved back to New York, and Rosie was like, look, can I see Henry? And I was like, yeah, I'll come over. And then she said to me, you know, so you don't have to go on the road. Why don't you send in a writing sample? Cause we need a writer. And I was like, okay. And I sent in a bunch of jokes, and the next day she did a couple of the jokes at the desk. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get a call. And I got a call, and that was it. Yeah. But
wow.
But it changed the trajectory of my career 100%. And plus, you know, right then I came out on stage because I was a gay parent and I had all this great material. And I was like, every comic talks about their family. No one's going to tell me I can't talk about mine. And what kind of message is it to give to your kids? Like, we don't talk about this. We're different, you know? And I think that had a profound effect on, you know, because I had just done an HBO special. And interestingly enough, all of these great organizations, LGBTQ plus, I would always host or be involved and, you know, volunteer or just whatever, and for their galas. And then all of a sudden when, you know, it became convenient in the aughts, late aughts, you know, like when they were like, all right, I'm a billionaire. I think I'll come out of the closet now. They never even fucking call me anymore. It's just so, it's this business. But, you know, it's just so funny when people, oh, they're so brave. They came out. It's like, oh my God, they came out of the closet after they made fucking $10 million. Shut the fuck up, brave.
Right.
Don't you think that?
Yeah. And what, like, they don't call you because now what? They're like, oh, well,
oh,
we'll,
no, I'm not,
we'll get,
you know,
an
it's
L,
like,
right.
We had you. Yeah. Yeah, when you couldn't, no one else would come out of the closet, you fuckheads.
Right. Now there's...
Whatever.
What do you think, speaking of, like, cancel culture and everything, what do you think of all the stuff that was going on at the Ellen show? Like, are you friends with Ellen? Do you know Ellen?
Oh, I'm not friends with Ellen.
And I'm not just saying that because you're a lesbian and a comedian.
Oh, yeah, no. But she's West Coast. I'm East Coast. I did work with her a couple times and she was fine. But I had been hearing rumors about this stuff. You know, like, everywhere there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, we had heard about, you know, Bill Cosby's a, you know, slob, pig. You know, I didn't know the extent. But I had heard, and I knew people who wrote on the show who were like, oh, the happiest day of my life was when I got to clean up my desk. But yeah, all that stuff. And you know, you gotta realize, you can't like go around saying, be kind, be kind, be kind, you know, and then not be kind and not know what the fuck's going on. But like, every TV show takes on the personality of the star. It's like, you look at our country, everyone's a miserable fuck in a bad mood, just treating people like shit because the guy at the top does that. Like, it's the same thing with a TV show. It's, you know, if the star is a piece of garbage and nasty to people, that's the way the set is. Like, that's how it is for the people who work there. So, I think you could get the truth out of, you know, all the people who work there. And there seemed to be a bunch of them. I mean, I'm sure there's some people who had a great time, who, you know, but you can't, I don't know. I feel like smoke, fire, baby.
That makes sense. And now somebody I just sat down with was Miss Melissa Rivers. So let's talk about.
I loved her.
Love.
I have a whole chapter in the book about Joan.
I can't, like, just amazing. So
there's one chapter called Can We Talk? And it's really about how she really embodied the whole idea of free speech, speaking truth to power. And in her 5 decades of doing stand-up, you really saw where women stood in society. And she was my fucking hero. So many heroes. I mean, you think about the impact she had. I mean, there was, yes, Lenny Bruce, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, you know, there were a lot of people who broke these, the Smothers Brothers, you know, these barriers that we had. But she, I mean, first of all, she's never more relevant than when she died at 82.
Totally.
She was so fearless. She was on the pulse of anything that was socially relevant. You know, she created the red carpet. I mean, oh, she was, and the fucking funniest. I can't believe you got Melissa.
Right. That's jealous. Listen, this is behind the velvet rope here.
Fuck it. But I have a whole chapter on her and I really want to send Melissa a book.
You should. Did Joan know that, like, you know, she was your...
Oh, yeah. I used to... I was friendly with Joan. The last time I saw her was here. She was performing here. It was August. She was performing at Town Hall. And I was like, oh, I'm coming. She's like, oh, you might have to do the show for me because who knows if I'm going to get there. And then I went to the first show. No one made me laugh like her. And then we hung out backstage in between. We had some wine. And then she said, let's make a Vine video. And I was like, what's a Vine video? That's how on the pulse she was. I had no fucking idea. Smart, brilliant, classy, kind. They don't make them like that.
No. They don't.
Yeah, but
I mean,
she knew. And she did. She knew. She hated. I'd be like, "Do you know what you've done for women?" Oh, I didn't do anything. I never did anything. You know, like, just I just fucking miss her.
I mean, right?
Oh my God! Yes.
What would she say about? I mean, like, it's what would she say about all of this? This cancel culture.
She would be like, "Oh, fuck you," you know. She never apologized for... She is the epitome. That's why I had to do the last chapter. Second to last chapter is all about her. She would be really annoyed about this because, you know, she was always like, oh, come on. Oh, shut up. The only time she ever sort of apologized for a joke was... when Willie Nelson's daughter wrote to her, because she had a joke about Willie Nelson being a big pothead since no one ever knew that.
Seriously.
And the daughter was a little, she was in school and the kids were teasing her. And so Joan took the joke out of, you know, her act. But, you know, with Elizabeth Taylor, you know, she called Roddy McDowell, who was their friend, both, you know, Elizabeth's friend and Joan's friend, and said, is Elizabeth bothered by, and she was like, he was like, no, she doesn't give a shit. And it's again, if she doesn't give a shit, why the fuck do you give a shit? You know? And everything she said was the fucking truth. Oh, she was so fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Do you follow Melissa's Instagram where she does the joke cards? Brilliant.
And, like, the documentary, like, that scene where she, like, went over to the edge of the stage, like, someone was heckling her, and she's like, get the fuck out of here.
Right.
Like,
right.
You can leave. Like, stand up and leave.
Right. I do that, too, you know. Yeah, I've learned so much from her, but, yeah, I do that. I'm like, really? Why? Well, you just came here to ruin everyone's fucking... Yeah, we watched that documentary. I actually watched it while... And Joan was there. It was some small theater, and they were doing a showing, and when she opens her calendar and there's no dates, you know, she talks about opening it and her biggest fear. Elisa was like, oh my God, that's you. Because it's, you know, this, there's something weird about having to get on stage every night and have an audience of strangers love you, you know, that we have this need. But she was brilliant.
She was brilliant.
Yeah.
Do you find, like, the audiences change? Like, you can do your Monday and your Wednesday show in Provincetown and, like, the same exact material just one night is off and another night?
Oh, yeah. You just, some things land with, but there's so many factors involved. You know, if the people had to wait online long. If it's cold, if it's hot, if they got in a fight before they got there, if they're on a first date, like there's all these, you know, other factors involved in whether an audience is enjoying your set or into it, you know, or, you know, and a lot of times if a piece of like, if an asshole, but this doesn't happen in Provincetown, but if you're doing, if you're in a showcase club and some like horrible comic goes on before you and, you know, dumbs down the audience and then you get up there and it's like, you know, there's times, but there's times where there are other factors involved, but usually I love a challenge. So if someone gets off stage and goes, oh, they suck, I'm like, ooh, I can't wait, you know?
Are you a fan of like any current comedians, like female, male, like any of the current crop?
All gender? Yeah, I love a lot of them. You mean the newer ones?
Yeah, or like, you know, like even like a Tiffany Haddish, Amy Schumer.
Oh, I love Tiffany. I love Amy. I love Rachel Feinstein. I love Jessica Kirsten. I love Carmen Lynch, Marina Franklin. There's so many. Bonnie McFarlane. I'm going to forget, you know, these are newer. And then, you know, I love Sam Morrell. Who else? I don't know. There's just so many. I like to focus on the women because, you know, we don't have it easy. Who am I missing? Who am I missing? Frankie French. I don't know. There's so many. Nicole Bayer. There's a lot. But yeah, Sam Morrell is one of my, I just love that guy. Alex Edelman. There's just so many.
There's a lot.
There's a lot of really good ones, and there's a lot of really shitty ones too, you know?
Do you ever get like, do you ever get like from what you do, you know, like when you're on the red carpet, like starstruck, like where you are meeting like a Madonna or someone like that, you know, just do you ever, or you're just, you know, I mean, you meet a lot of people through what you do.
I don't really get starstruck, you know, like
fangirl out.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
I did once, and I was at a friend's show, and I wasn't expecting, but I turned around, and there was Anna Deavere Smith, and I was like, oh my God, like, I just love her. And she's so fucking talented. I was like, oh my God. Like, and I don't even know where the fuck it came from. And I was like, oh my God, I have to sit in front of her. And she probably thinks I'm such an asshole. So I remember that. And Elisa was like, oh my God. You know, the whole time. And it was a small theater. It was. And then I remember on Rosie, like, there would be certain, like, Madeline Albright. Like, what's her name? Angela Lansbury. Like all these like icon-y people. But people like my age who were, I don't know. It's weird because it's just so funny when you see people when they first started and then you see how people react to them, like Wanda and Ray Romano. It's like, oh my God. I remember these guys, you know, bombing. Well, they didn't really, but you know what I mean. Just,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just funny how, who makes it to what level and the amount of luck involved and timing and just being in the right, it's just different. It's different for everyone. And so it's so hard to say, because I do see, and this is going to sound really arrogant, but I know there are people who are huge stars who got way more than I did in the business, but know that I'm a harder worker or think I'm funnier, you know, and just didn't get my due. You know, there is a lot of that. So I like being respected, you know, but I also know that fame, it's fleeting, and it's also luck. You just, half the time it's just, yeah, it's just, you're fucking lucky.
It is. It's a tough business.
Right, but people know that, like, Susie Essman is the greatest, like, she's so fucking funny, she's great on Curb, but she's like, you know, Larry called me and said, would you do this show? Like, I'm so lucky. Like, she's so, and she's just a great person. Mario Cantone, great person, you know. Joy Behar, like, there's all these people that know, you know, I got some great breaks.
Yeah. Two more questions before we wrap up. And then I
know I never shut the fuck up.
No. Okay? Well,
I feel like you're like, oh, no. God, she's going to continue to.
No, I'm just being respectful of your time. I could talk to you for 17 hours. Are you kidding me?
Good. Okay.
Talk to me just, you know, from podcast host to podcast host. Kill Me Now podcast. Do you love doing your podcast?
I do, but it is a labor of love because it's not like I make any money. But I love interviewing people. I love, like, I just want to know all the shit no one knows about you. Like,
yeah.
And especially growing up, like, what made you choose this life path, you know? And what were all the things along the way that made you who you are? And I, you know, at the end of my podcast, I always ask my guests what pisses them off the most. And that's always fun because no one talks about, like, even the most unanimated people, you know, get pissed off about something. And I'm always fascinated by people who don't get pissed off. Like, I am so reactive. And I like, when someone is incompetent or unjust or unfair, I'm like, I can't, it's just awful. And there are people who are like, all right, you know, it is what it is. And I'm like, what? Something's got to piss you off. And there, everyone has something that fucking makes them crazy. And I love talking about that. So, yeah, I love being a podcast host.
Well, feel free to have me on as a guest anytime you'd like.
Anytime, David.
I like interviewing people too. I do. I feel like you it's just like an intimate thing, whether even if it's on a Zoom, like you get to know someone.
Right.
And then you remember what they say. Like, I'm one of those people, if I pay attention, I don't pay attention to a lot of things in life, but like, right, if I interview, I'm paying attention, then I will remember it, right, forever. That's just.
But it's also because you're interested in it. Like, it's like,
yeah,
you know, some people don't want to learn about other people, but I think everyone has a story. And that's why I love doing the podcast, because it's like, you have a story that no one's heard. And so many of them are like, I'm like, what? Are you fucking kidding me? It's amazing what people have gone through in their lives to get to where they are. And yeah. And I think people's stories help other people.
I saw you do a live one at the Triad Theater with Sandra Bernhardt.
Oh, I fucking love Sandra. Thanks for coming. Yeah, that was really fun. Wasn't that fun?
I mean, the two of you together, that's,
yeah,
you know.
I love her. I love her. Utmost respect.
She's a, you know, she's a New Yorker. She lives in the area. You're two nice Jewish girls.
Yes, exactly.
Where do you see comedy going? Like, I mean, you're not going to change, but I mean, based on your book, like, do you see comedians, unlike you, unlike what Joan would do, like, do you see comedians succumbing to this?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are some, and I do respect this, who are like, you know, I'm okay adjusting, you know, okay, that's fine, but, and good for you, but that's not my style, you know? And like, why are you stopping yourself from laughing? Like, why? Why are you, you know, when I interviewed Gilbert for the book, he's like, there's so many times I say something and people are like, cover their mouths laughing, like, oh, I shouldn't be laughing at that. But they do, you know, and then you stop yourself. Why? What's that? Doesn't change the situation. You know, a joke doesn't cheapen anything. It actually causes people to talk about things, you know? Where there's no discourse, there's no growth. And, you know, I talk about disabled comics getting on stage. breaking the stigma. When I came out on stage and talked about being a lesbo mom, right? First of all, everyone in the audience with kids was 99.9% were straight. And after a minute or two, they were like, oh, it's the same shit we go through. You know, like they forgot. And then I was doing this bit in the early 2000s because I really couldn't believe we couldn't get married. Like, it was ridiculous. And especially when you have kids and they're like, wait, why can't you get married? And I'm like, yeah, why can't we get married? And I did this bit about all the people who can get married and have more rights than I do because it's a guy and a girl. So it was like Eric and Lyle Menendez, who killed their parents.
Right.
Both got married in jail. So they can file a joint tax return and get a federal inheritance tax break. But I can't. I can't because I'm a lesbian, even though I've been with my partner for 20 years and I have two. Like, they, like Mary Kay Letourneau, she can marry her, you know, 12-year-old student when he's of age. But I can't. And me doing that is going to really affect your fucking life, you know? And so I used to do this whole bit. And I remember in Houston, this guy, this army guy, he was a military guy, he came up to me. He's like, you know, I never really thought about it like that. Like, see why you guys want to get married. And I was like, that's the power of comedy. Like, so when you know, where do I see it going if we continue on this path of vilifying anyone for talking about anything important, you know, not good. Because satire and humor, those are the last bastions of free speech.
Yeah.
They really are. You know, you think about the Holocaust, there's documentation of prisoners putting on shows for one another, you know? In 1934, there was the Treachery Act, where if you made a joke about Hitler, you'd get killed. I mean, what? Come on. You know? It's ridiculous. Is that where we're heading?
Ugh, I hope not. I certainly hope not.
That's right, motherfuckers. That is right.
I was just going to say, so everyone needs to buy your book. Yes, I can say that.
It's Yes, I Can Say That. When They Come for the Comedians, We're All in Trouble. The audiobook was mentioned in the New York Times book review. People love the audiobook because it's really written in my voice, even though I don't want to hear it. But people do love it. Just lower the volume. And I'm so funny. But people are, if you're a comedy fan, you like to laugh, I think it's an important book.
I think so, for what we're going through.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to leave us with? Anything we didn't cover? I like to give people a chance at the end, to address any questions I didn't ask.
Here's what I want. I want everyone to buy the book and then I want them to give me a fucking 5-star review on Amazon and get rid of that fucking cunt review. And
I'll give you a 5-star review because I understand. It's the same thing with Apple Podcasts. It's like you get one review and you're like, fuck you.
Yeah. It's like, and you're home jerking off like with not any fucking talent. You know, go fuck yourself. I don't know. Just please vote. Everyone needs to vote. We got to get that motherfucker. I can't. Oh, it's so annoying. I don't know. That's it, I guess.
That's all good. Everyone needs to buy the book. You're amazing. I really appreciate you taking your time. You have a lot of things to do. You'll come back on. You'll come back on.
Anytime. Anytime.
I love you. And the next time you do a show, you know, in this area... When you're back in New York.
And email me if you come to P-Town.
I will, because like seriously, I have friends up there.
Yeah, you should fucking come visit just to get the fuck out.
I have friends that live there full time. They moved from New York to P-Town like years ago.
Okay, that's what you need to do.
And they're like, they don't miss New York. Even before it, having nothing to do with this, they moved up there and they're just like, it's a great place to be. It's a great community.
Don't tell the straight people. All right.
We're not. Thank you so much, Judy. I really appreciate
it. Oh, David, you're the best.
I will send you an email.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
So long.
Thanks for listening to yet another episode of Behind the Velvet Rope. Because without you listeners, I would just be a crazy person with voices in my head. And if you like what you hear, subscribe on Apple Podcasts under Behind the Velvet Rope. And when you're done subscribing, feel free to leave a 5-star write-up review, because the write-up reviews actually count. We read each and every one of them. We post the best ones, and the reviews really help our shows keep going. And we really appreciate everything you guys say, especially the positive ones. And if you want to find us online, we're at Behind Velvet Rope on Instagram. We are at David Yontef on Instagram. We're Behind the Velvet Rope on Apple Podcasts. Or head on over to Patreon, because you know what? There are just some things we can't talk about here. So for our bonus episodes, go to Patreon and type in Behind the Velvet Rope. And if you still aren't sick of me and you want more David, go to Cameo and book me on Cameo. And you can ask me anything there. I'll answer whatever you want. And I have a bargain basement price of $10. Thank you guys. See you soon.